bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
And Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody, that's me. Hi.
I don't want to be the one that says this.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to start nothing here.
Oh, man, how brave of you that you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Now I've decided. I'm going to do it.
Go.
Brian,
finally.
You're a liar.
Like, oh, wow. My secret is out. I thought I had deceived you all. Puff of smoke. Run away.
I mean, Brian, you don't look like a guy that had COVID. I'm saying you look a little healthy to me.
I didn't run 11 miles today. You ran 11 miles today.
It was the 5G.
No, I know I did not.
What are you getting at, Maine?
I'm saying you're looking healthy, man. You look like you bounced back and you've been, you know, we're exercising and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Rosy cheeks.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like, you know, that can happen. 40% of people who get COVID are totally asymptomatic. So I'm kind of a hero for having any symptoms.
Okay. That's cool. All right. No, in all seriousness, I am very, very, very happy to see you've recovered. And then we're talking before the show. Brian's like, yeah, you know, I jogged today, you know, half marathon.
To give context for that, I think, when you experience, number one, such a terrifying thing as getting this, you know, a known killer of a disease or whatever, you know that, you know, it's weird because healthcare professionals all give you this sort of milk toast blessing that it's like, you're probably fine. But that word probably is cold comfort at 2 a.m. when you're racked with chills. And
you're 99.9%.
Like, the odds are really pretty good. It's like, they'll say really, and then they'll dial it back with pretty good. But you know, it's one of those things like when you get healthy, it's a huge pattern interruption for all the crap food that you've been eating and all the sedentary lifestyle or whatever. So then you get to that point where it's a big deal to even be able to go for a walk around the neighborhood, and then you go for a mile, 2 miles or whatever. So it's like, I've just been doubling down on, we've talked a bit about this on After Things with kind of, you know, the healthy kick that Justin and I have been on, but man, like I'm going to bed earlier, which means I'm waking up earlier, which means I don't want to dabble in all the distractive behaviors that I always have. So I immediately go on a walk or whatever. And so they end up being these like 3.5 hour excursions. And it turns out you can walk quite a bit in 3.5 to 4 hours, mm-hmm. like 10 or 11 miles.
I love long walks. Like, that's like I get excited. Like, it's getting cooler now, the weather, so it's not like sun out there. And I'm like Bilbo, I'm going on an adventure.
And it's great nowadays. You know, all you need is your cell phone and a credit card in your pocket, and you could just keep walking with the quiet confidence of knowing
if you ever want to
go home, you could press a car show up, take me home button, and it really does feel like an adventure. I go into a neighborhood having no idea. We talked about it the other day. I took a trail having no idea where it ended up, and I was not worried at all. It's awesome.
I just kept running. So I'm very glad to hear this. And it is, you know, it is one of these things where part of the fear factor of COVID is that it does affect people differently, and there can be strains of it, your health conditions, all that other stuff. And it's such a scary thing, but it's very, you know, very good to see you on the other side of it. And I remember there was a flu 3 or 4 years ago that I swear almost made you hallucinate. But some people are like, oh yeah. And other people no. And you're like, man, so much of these experiences are subjective. And then trying to
it's also very odd because we are in a very large country for which so much of our population is connected to each other. And yet we don't think of ourselves as a massive, super diffuse and diverse country. Like we, you know, whenever you see look at how New Zealand handled it. And it's like, They're an island that's like the population of Iowa. If Iowa was like floating out into the sea, then it would be a different, it's a different way of doing it. And so you combine that with the fact that there's so much of a strata of how people are affected by it. And I don't know if there's any way to square that circle in how people's expectations of this disease are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. So, you know what, Brian? I have a suggestion for you.
Okay, I'm
you
ready.
Know what? I think your walking's fine. I think you maybe need, you know, they say swimming and water stuff is like really kind of even more healthy.
You know what? I got in a pool for the first time in almost a year, but it was only for like 20 minutes last week. But maybe I'll head back.
We've thought about maybe taking up something like surfing.
Oh my God. I've always wanted to be able to surf. I've never been able to do it.
Maybe now's the time, man. Now that you've got this new lease on, like, go surfing.
Wait a minute. I'm in the middle of Central Texas. Where am I going to surf?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Can't Do.
Yeah, wow. Didn't somebody just say I could keep walking and walking with my credit card forever?
Yeah, you could do basically anything, I guess, except surf.
And then you can hit a button and a car will pick you up.
There actually is a surf joint in Austin, and what they did is they ran a full-on train trestle across a like 3 or 4 foot lake. It's a very, very shallow lake, and what this thing does is it's their rails, picture train rails, full-on train rails, and they've got this thing that runs on the rails with, and now picture a giant plow that is over the sides and in the water, and then this thing runs on this train track, and the plow makes this perfect surfing wave. And it just and it makes it on both sides, and you could you could just pay for time, and you get a perfect surfing wave in the middle of Central Austin, or Central Texas.
We had in Florida, which was crazy. And as a kid, I never got it. And then one day, I'm like, oh! And it was this overhead. It was this lake where they had like the cable that went all the way around it on top of the towers.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are cool because and it's constantly
skiing,
towing.
Water skiing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never knew what it was. Then one day we're driving by and I just see people being pulled by a cable in the sky. I'm like, you can do it. It was like the first time I saw a monkey rodeo. This is a real thing.
You know, and I wonder whether did those go away? Like did like Sea-Doos becoming more cheap? Like, and now anybody could just like, oh no, if you're by a beach, you just rent a Sea-Doo and now you can just tow people and they can do these little skiing things. Cause I always imagine that I don't know if I ever saw one of those places in operation growing up in South Florida, but it is iconic in, you know, the idea of 70s or 60s, what Florida, South Florida was to the rest of the nation. Wow, that looks awesome.
Yeah, right? They're decent size. Looks like a 3 foot wave, I guess. Maybe 2.5 feet, but big enough for you to ride. And because it's like perfect every single time, then you get to ride it the whole way around.
Well, that's wonderful. On the water skiing thing, I guess they're called cable parks. So if you look up a cable park, because I guess looks like, you know, it's like a couple, you put in a few towers there, and kind of that's another interesting sort of approach.
Yeah, I guess part of me wants to say I'm surprised that I'm seeing. I guess I could think of like three of them I've seen more recently. Wow, these guys are good. Sorry, we're distracted.
They won the GoPro awards apparently.
But it seems so gimmicky when I first saw it that I was like, well, this seems cumbersome and crazy. I don't believe it'll be around forever. But I was wrong. It seems like that's a fine way to do it.
Well, I think this version of it is a little bit different than the initial idea, which was I think a little bit more. It reminded me of the athleticism of one of those like 50s machines that was supposed to help you lose weight by just jiggling your belly really fast. Like it was always
you
one
lean
of the
back on the belt and it just goes.
We're looking at here is they have all sorts of like ramps and stooks like rails. It's like a skate park meets a water park. Like they literally staircases, literally guys going up and down a staircase that's out of the water.
It looks like they have flooded a very flat skate park. Honestly,
yeah. It's good news, Venice Beach. This is your future after global warming.
wakeboard cable park in the Philippines.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Well, I'm sorry, but I want you to go out in the ocean.
Okay, I'm in. I was thinking about that the other day. As a matter of fact, this morning I jogged past a pond and the wind was rippling the water, and I was like, "Oh man, I miss water. I miss being in the water. I miss the ocean."
Well, I think that, you know, the ocean's healthy. It's revitalizing, and I think the best part about it is it can let you, you know, get close to nature.
Yes. I mean, I certainly feel at peace with the world. I feel, you know, calm. But when you say nature, do you don't mean like living critters, right?
No, like water, Brian. Okay. Water is part of nature.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Sand is part of nature. Everything that's within the sand and the water are part of nature. Right? You would agree that those are all good things?
I mean... yes, and
okay. All right. Let's make sure that the old pessimist Brian Brushwood is just scared of his own shadow. You know, you got water, right, Brian?
Yeah, sure.
You got sand.
Yep.
Everything therein. Boom. We're done.
provisional. Yes.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, here's the best kind of yes. The provisional yes.
And for the people in our chat who said sharks, wrong. Flat out wrong. It's not sharks.
Yeah, there's no sharks. Okay? There's no sharks in this ocean that I'm going to go to. That's a...
yeah, there are no sharks.
Just a shark?
You know. But the good news is, we've talked about this before, and this is what's kind of really cool, is that for places like in Australia, like, you know, which, you know, great place to go find sharks... They're using drones, okay?
To spot them?
So, yes. So when people are out there swimming, they fly drones. And so there's some great footage. Headline, pro surfer in Australia has close call with dangerous shark, closing beach. This drone operator is flying his drone out over the water because it's great looking overhead and sees there's the surfer paddling out. And there's the great white right behind him.
Oh, my gosh.
Like right now... two things. And the drone had a speaker on, like, hey, you might want to get out of the water. This happens all the time. Like, sharks come very close to people in a lot of areas, and they're not interested in you. They may see what you are, and they realize you're not what they want, whatever. Most like the shark bites and stuff that happen around beaches happen in murky water for the most part, et cetera. And so it shows two things. One, great, here's a tech to help people kind of stay clear of sharks. Two, this probably happens more often than we want. I think we saw some like police camera footage too, where you saw some guy swimming out there and we look overhead. There was like, you know, a shark, you know, near some guy swimming.
Yeah. So. Well, and I know that when I went to Australia, we went to Gold Coast, and they were bragging how Gold Coast, they're sensible and they have nets to keep the sharks out. Not like New South Wales where I guess this kind of thing happens.
Yeah. So, and again, it's, you know, what's practical, what's not, how much you want to close up the ocean, how much you don't, et cetera. But, it's a very interesting thing to see. And I think it's kind of a good idea to sort of this technology, because when you have people and large fish together and you're watching, this shark is definitely swimming around this person.
Wow.
You know, checking them out.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is when you compare it to, I would imagine it's fairly cumbersome and expensive to put up nets all around public beaches, but you could create virtual nets, because what you really, you don't really care about whether or not a shark goes near the shore when there are no people around. But if you have enough drones, you can just, what you care about is making sure sharks and humans don't get close to each other.
Yeah. And just so you know, in the video of this interaction, what we saw is we saw the great white come up close, see what he was, and then it swam away. And this is like when
it was scared.
Grossed out.
It was just like, ah!
Yeah.
Oh.
Like I was, that's where I did my shark dives, were there. And you know, the great whites, they would come up real close to me. And if you bumped them, they would go away, because he wasn't like, I'm going to eat you. He was like, are you a thing I might eat? They get close. And sometimes when it's harder to see, they use their teeth to tell if you're something they're going to eat, which is not good for you. But, no. And that's a lot of that happens. A lot of shark encounters, like you go scuba diving. There are sharks there. They're like, oh, who are you? Oh, boring, moving along. But
that,
you know,
that was
this thing happens way more.
That was one of the most surreal moments In college, I did spring break in I think Cozumel. I might be wrong. Probably somewhere else. But in Mexico, and so I went diving. And you know, you're amazed by the coral, you're amazed by all the tropical fishes, but the surreal inability to process what I was seeing came when we came up to a coral shelf, and our guide pointed at it, and the way I perceived it, because I wasn't prepared for a shark, I perceived, okay, there's something underneath this coral, and I saw, well, there's something moving over there, and there's something moving over there, and it was a good like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 before my brain was just like head and tail of just a simple nurse shark or whatever. It's funny how you get that break in reality.
Yeah, I'll show you a fun photo of a tiger shark. It is, and that was like, yeah, the first time I ever did a dive, I kept talking to the dive master. Oh, am I going to see any sharks? No, you're not going to see any sharks. I jump in there. Literally, the moment I clear my mask, the first thing I see is a nurse shark. And wow. As you notice, like, It's not, you know, divers like, oh, nurse shark, nothing. But if it's the first thing you see water and you see a shark,
look, man, you always remember your first, the first time you're face to face with a freaking shark.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Well, yeah. So the sharks are amazing creatures. And they are one of the things that we want to do is things like drone stuff is good because it allows them to continue doing their own thing. And, you know, we want to. They're a very vital part of our ocean, our ecosystem, and a lot of things are very dependent upon them. And we want to find ways in which they can live in the ocean, we can kind of go in the ocean, and we can kind of not, you know, have an impact on each other.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Man, that really will be wild, because right now we live in an age where various techs have talked about how Generation Z or iGen, as they call them, they sort of break before and after social media. There's different patterns, and so there's talk about different generations. But they talk about how iGen, anybody who was born after or raised after the advent of social media, tends to be much more conservative because they can accomplish more. They get their driver's license later. They lose their virginity later. They move out of their parents' houses later. There's sort of a conservatism, partly because we're able to virtualize so much of adventuring and going out. You know, in an age where you know, Gen Xers would have to after school you would hop around on rocks and get into fights with friends. Then nowadays you do that virtually. The fights are on Street Fighter, and the hopping on rocks is Super Mario. I wonder if technology is going to take us to a place where the reverse will happen, where there'll be drones, personal safety drones around you, or there's an expectation of, yeah, sharks are never a problem because there's always drones flying around. And if there was a shark, it would warn me of a shark. So I'm just going to go anywhere and do anything, and all the technology will keep me safe.
Maybe, you know, the danger comes in sharks move really fast underwater, and they can go from point A to B to point. You can be from zero sharks to a lot of sharks in a heartbeat.
In a couple of minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when we did a thing where we dropped a bunch of chum in the water in the Bahamas, and like there was like reef sharks and, you know, some sand sharks and stuff around us and one tiger, and you drop that in, every fish for miles sweeps in and everything else there. And then the bull sharks showed up, which you did. So we didn't see anything. Never saw a single bull shark until all of a sudden there was food in the water.
Wow. So
that's the thing. So this is a photo of a tiger in the Bahamas. But there was 2 years ago, there was a horrific, like, a person got shark attack. I don't know if they identified the species yet, but for the most part, like in the Bahamas, like, they're around people all the time. You know, you can see them. You can do these shark encounters where you sit down in a group and put your hands together, and then they feed like a tiger shark, you know, comes close. So, I mean, that's that. And that shark there also kind of is people. This is in Australia. This is one of like the 16 great whites that was around us that would just swim right up, bump. If it wanted to eat me, it would have eaten me. So we're looking at a shark over, it's an over my shoulder shot of a great white coming up. And that's the thing that I sort of learned was like, yeah, no, when it wants to kill you, it'll kill you. You know, if it wants to find out what you're made of, it might accidentally kill you. And if it's just kind of curious, it's like, eh, whatever.
It is a weird thing to think about biting in a non-aggressive kind of way, but man, we're seeing that with our puppy, because it's very clearly out of excitement and affection. And it's like, now let me like, oh, kisses, kisses, kisses. This is so great. Let me give you needle sharp puppy teeth. and boy, you know, all the books say, well, you know, if that happens, react with a loud yelp. And it's like, yeah, no need for the text on this one because those are sharp and that's easy to do.
Can we hear your whelp?
Oh no! Usually it's like it's like, oh no! like it's more shocked. Like I feel like Charlie Brown getting set up by Lucy over and over and over again. It's like, what did I think was going to happen? Of course, it's going to be lick, lick, lick. Everything's great. This is so great, chomp.
Well, I'll tell you what you can think is going to happen and what will happen when you go to patreon.com/weirdthings. You might think that is just a total scam.
I did.
You would be wrong. Well, it is not that, Brian, so please stop saying it.
Okay.
What this really is a great way that you can support this very podcast. Keep us independent. Keep us doing this each and every week. Head on over there, patreon.com/weirdthings, and get the After Things podcast, which is our discussion of business and entrepreneurship and all other issues that comes across our mind. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Kind of a cool story about using artificial intelligence. One of the things AI, you think of prediction. Think of like AI is really good at making predictions. Like this is most likely this, right? And looking at images, NASA and some researchers using artificial intelligence were able to identify craters on Mars using this. The AI was able to go over, you know, this, you know, we have tons and tons of images from Mars Surveyor of the Martian surface. And now they're using AI to help go process those images and find interesting details.
So help me to, oh, is this a case of image enhancement or because at first when you were teeing this up, I was thinking, oh, maybe like old craters that have been eroded over time, they're able to figure out. But you're saying fresh craters, are they particularly small or what about them would be hard for humans to notice?
Well, it's the sheer volume. You think about where we've been. We've had a satellite over the surface of Mars trying to record, you know, every square inch of that we can. And so, you know, it's identifying craters, you know, 13 feet across. And so it's just not effective to have a human go through and look at all
this. Got
it.
Well, and especially, I guess, also for fresh craters where you would have to compare before and after of areas that it's surveyed more than once.
Yeah.
That seems like a good job for AIs.
Yeah, and it's a very neat thing to have done. We've seen examples of like there were kids who were studying like the Mars image data set and they found like a lava tube or something like that.
Wow.
And there's just, I remember like looking at some of the first Mars photos, I was transfixed because we talk about like the spiders, which are these like formations in the southern part, like carbon dioxide crystals that form these really cool formations. And who knows, you know, what other weird and interesting geology we're gonna see there. But yeah. AI can help us find something, you know, tell me you got something cool.
Per NASA, normally it would take a human about 40 minutes to look at one of these context camera images. This AI now can scan that image in about 5 seconds.
Good that's God. Awesome.
And that's just a matter of how much processing power you want to throw at it, too.
That's insane. I mean, we're just going to like, we're just going to know. I mean, just get a... compared to the kind of tech we have up there now and how rapidly tech has sort of evolved, especially in those cameras and sensors. And then the idea of what we can do with the data once it comes back, that's massive. I mean, not to mention the fact that getting up there is going to be faster and cheaper.
You know what, on the subject of Mars, I don't think we talked about this on Weird Things, but a few weeks back, I could have sworn I saw a headline suggesting that there were indications that under the polar ice caps, there were extremely briny, extremely salty liquid lakes. Am I making that up or is that something?
No, we did it. We did actually cover that.
We did talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a thing that, you know, we went from as Mars, you know, a dry rock to like, it gets you all that. Cause like, I'll read ahead. I'm like, wait, did I read this? Like, oh, this is a confirmation now. And now we have more data. There's kind of, I think it will be a very growing area for every form of science is add the word computational before it. And we've had in astronomy, we've certainly for image processing, we've been doing that for years. It's one of the places where like image processing actually got started was both from like the spy industry, like how to get better images out of satellites. And then with astronomy is like, how do you look at this weak, this galaxy that's far off and take the spectrograph and turn it into data? But now with larger data sets and image sets, that's going to be another area where you're going to see computational astronomy, where people are like, oh, how do we take these different data sets and identify stuff? And I think it'll be kind of exciting because we're going to find out entirely new details and layers that just the signal didn't surface by itself. I wish I had an example. My point, but it'll be cool, guys.
What's funny is like I think you're so right that what you just heard was the sound of four minds trying to figure out how much more right there is, and the answer is no, not more right.
that was the sound of my brain giving two thumbs up.
Yeah. Well, and giving an example, you know, an early form of that was, you know, when we looked at the sky and then we noticed over time that objects moved. And part of, like, you know, the origins of calculus and stuff was because you had Isaac Newton and Leibniz, people like trying to figure out, like, how are things moving this way? Pattern is this following? Why is this going? And so much of the roots of like a lot of modern computation calculus actually comes from looking up and seeing things there and trying to figure out the formula for it. And then, you know, just going beyond that.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things we've talked a bit about, the stuff covered in The Social Dilemma. And that's one of the things that gives me pause to want to react negatively to all the data collection that stuff like Google and Facebook do. Because on the one hand, that's very powerful. It could be used to sell us, you know, dish soaps and tchotchkes that we happen to be thinking about. But on the other hand, you know, you think about before you can even start writing and inventing calculus to explain the motion of the wandering stars of planets, it took eons, thousands of years of data collection and prediction. And you begin with the data first and then you get to the explanation. And so it's hard for me to want to react negatively to any entity, whether they're trying to sell me something or not, collecting data, since that's the first step to any kind of understanding.
I guess it would kind of come down to how they're incentivized to use it, because you see this, like, if I do a search, like, you know, I have eczema, right? And if I have to look up something, I go incognito, or I use private browsing in Safari because I don't want my Google search to be filled up with a lot of bogus stuff and other things there. And I'd say that if I felt more confident it was actually being used, because, like, one of the things that an area of interest for me is, like, there is so much data. And one of the things I've talked about is like using tools we have now to like filter through all this people reporting self-reported data and message boards about conditions and stuff. Oof. Because there's a lot of data out there to be given. And if you're a pharmaceutical, you might be able to look at like 10,000 people talking about a thing and notice trends and say, oh, shoot, this might work or whatever. And so I'd say if that was happening more, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's, and I know my logical mind says that I should look at statistically significant samples. For example, an Amazon rating is a really good proxy, because part of the reason I bought my new smartwatch, the Garmin Vivo Active 4, was because in a world where I was seeing kind of anywhere from 2 stars to 5 stars for you know, the Fitbit latest or whatever, the moment I got to the Amazon rating, it was like 2,500 reviews and it was at 4.5 stars, which meant like instantly, like statistically significant, it's very unlikely I'm going to buy this and feel like a chump. But as much as I know that in my smart head, I am inordinately swayed, because what I'll do is I'll go to Reddit and I'll search for individual accounts of people who write a paragraph or three about, you know, in casual conversation. And I know that's not right, but I can't help myself, because my monkey brain wants to hear the individual personal story.
I do the same thing. And I would defend it by saying that the problem is there's a very effective system right now to try to game Amazon. And that I'm suspicious when I see way too many reviews on a thing, when it's way too many and too high or whatever. And the Reddit thing is, if you read an engaging personal account and if the quality of the writing, sometimes it can be more persuasive, you know, one persuasive, let me tell you this, versus 1,000. I loved it. Hubby liked it.
Right.
And they'll do like tricky stuff on Amazon. I remember I wanted to rebuy something I had bought in the past, and I go through my order history and I click on it, and it's a completely different item. Like it seems like all sorts of shady stuff is out there. In terms of just like co-opting old listings and assuming old reviews.
Oh, wild. Oh, because the code, like to Amazon, that's just a SKU number.
Right.
And you can change, you can update the photo and you can update the name of a thing over time. And maybe what started off as a beach towel with SpongeBob SquarePants becomes a miracle health cure for your eczema or whatever.
And it's fun because you can sometimes see old comments about the other product still on that page.
That's crazy. I can't believe I've never encountered that notion until now.
Yeah. Well, you know what would help, Brian?
What would help?
If we took your dog. What's your dog's name, by the way?
Joyful.
Say the full name.
Joyful Federal Agent Bryce Doug Neshkov Castillo Brushwood.
I can't believe that stuck around. I'm so excited around.
It was the deal was sealed when Penny loved it. And then it was locked in stone.
Well, I know you love your dog. Do you love your dog, Brian?
I do. Just question. I do. A little bit less when she's biting my face.
Yeah. You know, if you really loved your dog, Brian.
Yes.
You really loved your dog. You'd give your dog the best chance possible at success and surviving this world.
I swear,
world.
If this is a Montessori school for dogs, I'm tapped out. I can't.
No, Brian.
Oh, good.
This is the future. This is augmented reality goggles for dogs.
Oh my God, yes, please.
So this is a story that I flagged, and it was also pointed out to his Twitter because it's just too good to ignore. The U.S. Army is testing augmented reality goggles for dogs.
That's awesome. And
there's a photo of this. I don't know if they have the, if you find, where is this from? The Verge has an actual photo of the dog with the AR goggles, and it is the most adorable, awesome thing. This is the Ready Player One sequel that you want. Okay.
In the chat, they have it. Dead Polymers says, more like augmented reality doggles. Hey, by the way, the dog wearing virtual reality goggles looks exactly how you would picture it.
It's like, it's awesome. Yeah. Like, a Rottweiler maybe, and he looks like he's wearing one of those prototypes. You know when they show phototypes of like, oh, we had to prototype by putting cell phones
with
taping
wires all over it.
Yeah,
it looks like a big bad in a Chippendales Rescue Rangers movie, and the dog is named Baron von Barkington.
I had my eyes removed so that I could be more powerful.
It looks like, that's the funny part is it looks like really high tech, and then you get a closer look, and I swear to God, I have that, it's the one field of view, the thing in the corner, I think I have that same imager somewhere.
Oh, that's
strapped
funny.
To a really cool looking like goggles, so you're thinking like the goggles getting like Terminator vision, but it's getting a little thing in the corner, which is cool. It's not like it's complaining about like, you know, oh dude, you know, the foveation on this is horrible. So
yeah.
I mean,
I guess like literally just keeping the goggles on the dog is 99% of it, right?
The dog looks so chill. Also, chat room says dogmented reality.
So there are a lot of applications for this because, you know, we use dogs a lot, both in policing and military and rescue and other stuff, and being able to communicate with them. Generally, you do it, you know, voice, because you try to keep in line sight of your dog, but you can't always do that. And you can also give the dog other kinds of bits of information. Maybe not letting it read a Twitter feed, but certain visual stuff that could pop up could tell it stuff. You could put sensory stuff on there. If, let's say, the dog gets close to a thing, the trainer doesn't realize, like, you know, really, you know, smoke or something else that you want the dog to stay clear of, or you need to call it back. So it's a very clever idea.
Well, and not only that, I suppose also there would be proximity detectors. It would sort of maybe show a path to get back or show where, you know, its handler is.
I don't know how good their map reading skills are.
But I mean, like, for example, you know, you train the dog so that when everything flashes red, that means go back to your handler. Maybe there's some kind of guidance to let you know when you're getting close to the handler.
Give army dogs a crazy taxi arrow.
And Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And Hearthstone.
At the next fire
hydrant, competition.
Turn left.
So anyhow, very cool, very interesting approach. And, you know, we use dogs so much for a lot of purposes, like trying to find survivors, you know, and things like this, you know, investigating crime scenes or, you know, disaster scenarios, whatever. They're even like, you know, like their ability to detect like certain kinds of diseases and stuff. And also another option for this might be too, is you might be able to have a trainer who's the highly skilled trainer. And then you might be able to just have a program where it's easier for, you know, the AI to talk to the dog to get, well, gosh, AI dogs. Do we want this?
Ooh. I mean, let me ask you a question though. With where we are in terms of like microphones and sensors and speakers and how cheap everything is there an augmented reality where a human could effectively have an equivalent of the natural sensory abilities of a dog? Like, could you, like, you know, hear or smell, like, you know, have it represented to you in whatever level? Like, the reason why we have dogs is because they're able to find things better, but can we make up that gap with tech?
Well, I think we've talked at some point over the last decade about electronic noses, you know, computer sampling things. And then we've also talked about how there are devices, for example, little pressure points. It would be like a vest and it would tickle your back and you would eventually get an intuitive sense of what things are happening because the brain is really good at training itself. Or little wafers that you would put on your tongue that would electrically, you know, kind of poke you. It feels like a crackling on your tongue. And then your brain just sort of gets used to the idea in an intuitive way. Like what they were talking about is like feeding it with either Twitter trends or financial data. And then the idea being that after 4 weeks of having corn futures pumped into your back, you'd be all like, oh my God, I think there's about to be a crash in corn futures at some intuitive level. So certainly I think the pathway is being cleared towards exactly that.
The scent is the hardest one because your nose is 1,000 different like sensors for detecting all kinds of different stuff. And that's why they still use, you know, they'll use dogs for detecting, like, you know, does somebody have drugs? What's going on there? Yeah. Because we can build a single use device that can maybe detect something pretty well. It will get there eventually, but that's the hard part.
Right now, for humans, the best way to tell if you have drugs is just to see if they're a real chill dude. Yeah.
Sunglasses, check. Cocky attitude, check.
Did somebody brought up Boston Dynamics in here, and they're the ones that made the really cool and freaky dog, like robot dog and walkers. But we tell you about the last time we saw one of them was, I'm going to send this to Bryce.
We definitely kind of broke down the what we perceive to be, if I'm remembering correctly, a fairly woefully inadequate advertisement for the spot in that it looked like
it
a really great solution
a
for a problem
site
that nobody had.
Yeah. Well, I'll show you one that somebody found an application for it.
Oh, right on.
It's very related.
And I think we did. I think we did talk also a few months ago about was it in China where they were using these to alert people in parks, saying like, "Hey, keep separated,
keep distant.
I'm
keep
the dog.
Distant. Not because of coronavirus, because we don't have any here. Our numbers remain unchanged. There is no coronavirus in China. I am a dog.
I would not lie. Imagine. I don't know. You're testing some equipment, like I don't know, a rocket. And it crashes.
Ooh.
And you want to be able to have something go up to the scene.
Oh my God, it's in the smoke like a superhero.
Oh, that's amazing. So I guess the precursor to this would be like the bomb defusing robots on treads, but this is going to be able to go over uneven terrain and walk right up to, is this a SpaceX thing?
Yes, this was months ago. They had one of their ground tests where the thing blew up and flipped over. And people spotted a Boston Dynamics robot walking through the still smoking debris with its cameras to get up close and see what's going on.
And in a case where at any moment it might explode, number one, that's obviously the safer way to do it. But also you've got to get something in there before it explodes because you got to get an up close picture of what the rupture is before you miss the chance.
So imagine This is freaky footage. Imagine this was a world where up until now, the Boston Dynamics, the robot dog, had been a secret. And you have these, this is footage where people are watching this. Like, this is footage. There are people there who have, like, cameras mounted on houses to watch SpaceX facility in Texas to see what's going on there.
Yeah.
And so they're on there watching this for the first time, seeing...
God, that would be so great. Yes. What looks like an alien exoskeleton technology. It's
just crazy.
Around.
Yeah. A crazy supervillain stuff. I mean, even the idea of thinking that it would be a, like, if we didn't know that this was a thing that was created, out of, as a robot, I wonder if there would even be guesses of, like, wow, what kind of animal could survive this? Like a specially bred thing?
You know, imagine, you know, Brian, you're doing a Modern Rogue episode and your toothpaste experiment goes awry and the whole garage collapses and you hear scratch, 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 and strange metal robot dog over you. Come with me if you want to live.
I will lead you to safety.
So the future's crazy.
That's amazing.
You want to do picks?
Yeah, dude. I haven't watched a lot over the last week because I've been walking, but you know what, I've been consuming. I just finished the second book today, but I'm digging on the Brandon Sanderson Mistborn series. It's a trilogy. It's got a really interesting magic dynamic. I think I mentioned it when I was starting book one, but it's fun because book one you get a sense of the video game magic rule book. And then in book two, they start to enhance and show exceptions to the rules or stuff, which is fun. And I'm starting book three now, having a good time with it.
Very cool.
My pick is The Boys, wrapped up its second season. I loved it. I thought it was. I thought it landed the plane. It continued to add a new dimensions to a very exciting and fun world. I think that the guy who plays Homelander, whose name I need to learn because I think he should
Anthony
get an
Starr.
Emmy Anthony Starr needs to get nominated for an Emmy. Like his, I don't know if there is a character on television since like Stringer Bell or Tony Soprano or something where it's like, you know that these are bad people, but you really just want to see them continue to ping pong through this world. Just such an amazing, it's a good character. It's an exceptional performance.
Absolutely.
And I loved it.
I would say poor choice of words though. They did not land the plane. Otherwise the season would have had a different trajectory.
No. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Awesome job.
I got a question about The Boys. Normally, when you can tell that somebody is doing a thing ripped out of actual headlines or real moments from history, it takes me out of the story. For example, like Battlestar Galactica, they did a pretty good job of hiding the fact that they were secretly, they called it like Cylon blood would heal diseases or whatever, but secretly it was about fetal stem cells or whatever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I listened to the writer's room that I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that is what they're doing. And it took me out of it when the election was really just a straight up Trump v. Gore redux, ballot stuffing thing. Did I say something else? Bush Gore. But for some reason, The Boys is much more naked and transparent with what they're taking out of the headlines. And I don't mind it one bit. That's definitely George W. Bush's speech after 9/11. That's definitely
how
the
far
memes.
Into it are you, too?
Oh, I'm all caught up.
Yeah. And so I would say that, like, yeah, but it's one of these things where sometimes there's an example in art where people go, we're going to make a political message, but then sometimes they happen to be really great storytellers. Like, and we're going to deal with these complications as these come along, but we have a message. And then by the time the story goes through the really good story brain, I'm like, I don't know if you made the point you wanted to, but this was really entertaining.
Yeah.
And I would say that that was an example. Cause like, yeah, like you had an opportunity here that was a great story and you took it, which shifts your narrative in a way that's like, I loved it. We'll spoiler free here. Season one, I was like, man, they nailed that ending of it because it was like the stakes have changed. We got closure, not what we wanted, but we got it. And season two, like, this is textbook for like how you can make people, I think, happy with where it goes.
And apparently, and I have not read the comic, but there is an element that is like kind of foundational to the very beginning of the comic that they still haven't pulled the trigger on. And I'm thrilled. I'm excited. As soon as they ended that season, and I'm like, what a rich new world we have. I loved it.
Yeah.
I got a pick. This has been coming out for a few weeks now, and I think they've got a few more before they wrap it up. But did any of you get a chance? I think it was a year or maybe longer ago. There was kind of a multimedia story that was posted online called 17776 from John Boyes, the future of college football. And this
I saw it retweeted by Bryce and the Bryces of the world.
And so it's this this kind of perspective on what does it look like in a world where humans are safe and they're not multiplying and they are well kept and they are all finding just ways to entertain themselves. And the idea is that they keep coming up with new ways of what football looks like in
Remains a perpetual allegory for war, basically, or
no, it's I don't know. I wouldn't say that. It's kind of a post scarcity almost sort of world. There's not really worry about money or jobs or anything.
Got it.
So they've got a new follow up series of that out now called 20. I don't know a good way. 17776 is really easy to say. 20,020, which is a kind of a sequel. It takes place obviously about 3,000 years after the last one, and there's a new concoction of football that has been dreamed up by the satellites. That also this takes the perspective of this is from deep space satellites, and so they're just watching everything going on at Earth at all times and keying in on what the humans are doing. And what's really nice is I think they do a very good job of having both this textual side to it where you're reading conversations and dialogue and you're using just simple formatting things to separate speakers and voices. But then each installment also has video accompaniments to them as well. And if you've ever seen any of the John Boyes videos where he uses Google Maps and Google Earth to make these really interesting and lo-fi sorts of geographical based video elements, this ties in exactly like that. And so I don't know, I think it's great. They're coming out Monday, Wednesday, Fridays on Secret Base, which is a new vertical for SB Nation. But it's fascinating, and they've got an interesting story of what does it look like if there is 111 football fields that are stretching across the earth, and wow. There are all sorts of new rules for what you do with that. So
yeah, I think safe to say that this is in the far future speculative fiction realm and not necessarily in the you got to be into college football realm.
Right. There is only there's only been one chapter in this current run that they've put out where I had to actually stop and go like, I don't really know what they're talking about. But most of the time they do a very good job of describing, oh, this is how, you know, that in the 20th century they would do it like this and now it's the 200th century. So I think it's really cool. 20,020. There you go. We'll have the link in the show notes.
Awesome.
Cool.
Andrew?
I've been using this tool lately, and it's been on my radar for the other people using it. And then it's one of those things where I'm like, at first I'm like, yeah, it seems okay, but I don't know, not for me. And then I needed to do a thing. I started using it more, and that's Notion. Notion.so. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with this, but
I don't remember hearing it.
So it's a way you can use it as a personal productivity tool, or you can use it with teams. And where Slack sort of ends, kind of like the idea is Notion begins. So it's a way to do group documents, create really cool stuff. You can go in there and create a page, and you can embed spreadsheets on it. You can put tables, other stuff, just write text, embed pages within pages. You can make a page public. It's just imagine like if Google Docs had kept evolving. And that's kind of it's really worth it. If you do any kind of personal productivity or any kind of team stuff, it's worth taking a look at and playing around with, or just watching the videos to see what it can do. Hmm. It's like, I've, you know, been having to make like notebooks of, you know, notes on stuff, and I can just put them in a Notion doc, then create a page in the Notion doc, a link to it, whatever. I can create shared ones that other people can collaborate on. And the ability to just pull images and other kinds of content into it is just amazing. So Notion.so, I would say check it out. And it's on, you know, different mobile versions too. I'm really underselling it, but I would say that, like, I would say for anybody who does anything at all, ever, with their hands or mouth.
Similar to the business model of Slack, where it's free up until you're a grown-up business and then they figure out a way to charge you, or?
Yeah, you can use it for yourself for free. And then if you have a team and you bring team members on, then it's where it starts to get, you know, more. But I would say as a personal productivity tool, like even play with it, it's free. And you can share stuff with guests, you know, using that. I think it's a really, like I said, I think it's a very, very useful tool. I've been using it a lot now because to organize notes and thoughts, it's just, I needed something. I put a lot of stuff in Apple Notes, which I think is actually evolved and is great. I do a lot of stuff in Google Docs, which is not so great now. It hasn't evolved. Mm-hmm. Google Docs is really frustrating. It's a product from 2010, mm-hmm. not from 2020. This feels like you can embed audio in this, video in this. You pull links in there. They're really good at putting, you know, all the stuff in there. It's a really, it'd be like if we sat down to say, let's create a really cool documentation and group work experience, you know, anything you could kind of want for it, I think is in there.
I like its layout. Its layout is very, the page you're on is what matters, where I think a lot of productivity tools get very menu focused and menu obsessed, where this is like very, about as clear and uncluttered as you can make a product like this.
And you can in seconds, let's say you needed to share something with people, you can go create a page. You can pull in a header. It has a thing like, oh, just pull from Unsplash your header image for it. As you see here, we're looking at a thing with a pretty image there. Pull in use an icon, like it's very emoji friendly for Android. Write whatever you need on it. Now get a public link and go share it with everybody. And if you wanted to get information out on Twitter or create a page to do something, I think it's a very different way of sort of sharing stuff, of kind of moving somewhere between the website and the document model, which I haven't thought of much about that space. The idea they've been sort of, they do those things poorly, but together this has been, I'm very impressed with it. And I don't even think I even begin to tap it.
That's cool. Wow. It seems really...
It's also very easy to sign up. It's like you just go there and you're like, yes. And then it says, you want to use your Google account? It's like, yes. Now I have an account.
And I think, you know, I think you're right about Google Docs and to some extent like Microsoft Office being kind of stuck in the past, right? Like I get frustrated when if I get like a Google or if I get a Word document, because then I got to take it into Google. But then you look at Google Docs and there hasn't been any major changes. I mean, that's kind of why I switched off of Gmail, because Gmail hasn't really evolved in the past few years other than, you know, small incremental things.
This is pretty cool. It says, welcome to Notion. Here are the basics. And it gives you kind of a rundown of all your to-dos to get familiar. And the first thing it says is click anywhere and just start typing. So I did. And then I realized I'm typing on the list of, like, I'm modifying the how to use it doc. And I'm like, oh, shit. That's how surprised I was.
If you just hit forward slash, it gives you a list of, I want to create a list. I want to create. They did so much stuff, so intuitive, that I was really impressed with. You know, here's a little thing to think about the Google Docs. Like Google Docs is like, it's 2020. And with Google Docs, everything is still a page. There's no way to default like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. There's no way to just say continuously like do this. Conversely, Notion, long documents, but you click export, you can export it to Markdown or a PDF, and it will create this beautiful PDF of everything you did. And so I would love to see, Brian, your thoughts on it, because it might be like for a lot of your episode creation and stuff like this, it has a really cool ability to sort of work pretty fluidly between, let me just brainstorm, create a page here, etc.
Yeah, is there any equivalent to, especially for podcast layout and stuff, we tend to use just the cells in like an Excel-style spreadsheet in Google Docs. Would I assume that there's something like that built in here,
like a sheet based?
Yeah, if you go look at, if you go click on the forward slash, you'll see this sort of option of like, I want to add a bulleted list, to do list, and then you get into stuff like table, inline, a board. You can do a, like they call it a Kanban board. You can do a gallery, you know, so all sorts of other stuff to be able to drop
there it is.
In.
Yeah, yeah. There's
content.
A table.
Interesting.
Very cool.
Cool stuff. Yeah. Notion.so.
So Notion.so.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh.
Sorry, no, I'm now. Yo, what have you done to me, Andrew?
No. I was around it. I didn't know what it was, and then one day I'm trying to do a thing. I'm like, oh, let me go try this Notion thing, and I'm like, OMG! And I did like literally wrote 100 pages of stuff super fast because like I was doing some documenting some stuff, and it just really, really was great. So, anyhow, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.